Okay, welcome back. You're listening to WATD 95.9 FM. With us tonight is Beth O'Connor, who is an experienced executive director with a demonstrated history of working in rural health advocacy. Ms. O'Connor has had the opportunity to work at a camp for persons with disabilities, a county health department, and a small town transit service. Since 2005, she has served as the executive director of the Virginia Rural Health Association. A dedicated advocate, she was recently selected to be the president-elect of the National Rural Health Association for 2021. Congratulations, Beth. Thank you for joining the show.
Well, thank you for having me here. I very much appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming. So we've been discussing telehealth on our show, informing our listeners the benefits of receiving care in remote areas and even in your own home. The Virginia Rural Health Association, which you are in charge of, is a nonprofit organization working for the 2.5 million people who call rural Virginia their home. I was on your website and there is a ton of information to review. So Beth, please tell us, how was last year and are you prepared for 2021?
Well, you know, last year, like everybody else, we had to make some changes in our plans to accommodate COVID. Something that interesting that came out of that we had not anticipated was we learned that many of our small rural health clinics have a hard time getting the protective equipment they needed, the masks and gloves and those types of things, because they just don't have the purchasing power the big hospital systems do. And so when there's a shortage and a big demand, they just could not compete. And so we sort of ad-libbed a group purchasing entity out of the various mm-hmm. rural health clinics and some free clinics and some other folks in Virginia and started buying stuff in bulk and parceling it out and sending out to folks, some of my staff driving it here and there, and some of it with the help of Angel Flight, having it flown to some of the rural sites.
No kidding. That's unbelievable. What a chore. That must have been a task to complete. So explain, how does the Virginia Rural Health Association provide rural health organizations with education and information and advocacy during the COVID-19 pandemic?
Sure. So you hit upon the three big things that we provide to rural Virginia and to our members. Information, you know, electronic newsletters go out, COVID or no. So that certainly hasn't been an issue on our end. For education, we definitely had to rethink our annual conference. The Rural Health Voice Conference is in November of each year to coincide with National Rural Health Day. And so for this year, instead of having a live in-person event, we selected five top-notch speakers, pre-recorded presentations from them, and gave people the opportunity to purchase the opportunity to listen to those presentations, and then did a follow-up with each speaker as a guest on our podcast.
Excellent. That seems to be the trend now with conferences, is to attend them virtually. And, you know, you think about it, you're saving a lot of people the travel and the cost to stay in a hotel, rent a vehicle and Uber and meals. So there's a real discount there in basically getting the same information, that same professional expertise through this virtual webinar. So that's a great way to get information out. Further, a couple of questions. How are you funded? What was the federal response since the beginning of the pandemic?
So most of our funding, none of our funding is related to the pandemic. Most of our funding is for various program activities. We've got a number of grants from the feds to address the opioid crisis, put training and education programs in place. We've got mm-hmm. a project with HRSA to work with our rural health clinics to help them implement telehealth programs, as you know full well, and to help them address hepatitis C in our rural communities. And then we also have a grant specifically to address the needs of our LGBTQ community members, to making sure that they're receiving health care in a culturally competent manner that makes them feel welcome. And so with that, hats off to the folks with the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, because they have absolutely been willing to just roll with the punches and have made sure that we still have the support that we need, and then also have been very accommodating with the understanding of, you know, needing to move deadlines around or needing to move from in-person mm-hmm. events to virtual events and all of those types of things.
Interesting. That's great. I'm glad that's working out and you're able to provide all that information and you're funded properly for that. So what does it take to advocate for new policies? What goes into the planning and the efforts? What are some of your advocacy efforts?
Sure. So at the federal level, we work hand in hand with the National Rural Health Association and help to promote the national rural health policy initiatives. NRHA has coming up fairly soon their annual policy institute, which normally would be in person in Washington, D.C., where we tromp around Capitol Hill and meet with our elected officials. But of course, we will be making adjustments and having those meetings virtually. But it really comes down to, you know, making sure that you tell the story of what the need is in our rural communities and being able to back that up with solid data.
Yeah, it always comes down to a strong story and something to back it up with for sure. So I know our company, Blue Cirrus, is currently working with you on promoting telehealth to all of the rural clinics in Virginia. I recently called on a few for you. And the rural clinics and the providers I spoke to told me they were having issues with connectivity is always a problem. And some of the responses were that telehealth and being too old for telehealth and most patients don't have an iPhone. Can you help explain how to get through that as we work together on that?
Well, you know, a big issue for rural America is the lack of broadband in many communities. It's amazing, you know, when you look at the broadband maps and there's these kind of big, vague holes. There's a difference in what people say they have and what the telecom providers say that they're providing. Just because I'm in somebody's service area doesn't necessarily mean they're actually providing me service. You know, personally, I live 7 miles out of Blacksburg, Virginia, the home of Virginia Tech, mm-hmm. and I have nothing on my house. There's just nothing there. And so for our rural providers, this is a big complication. Oftentimes their patients, you know, just don't have a way to do things like remote visits or remote monitoring. And sometimes even at the hospital or clinic itself, it's very difficult for them to be able to provide the level of service that they need. We had one hospital, and this story is a couple years old, so this might have actually changed. But a few years ago, the hospital had an old mammogram machine that used actual film. And they wanted to upgrade to a digital machine. They could afford to upgrade to a digital machine. Their old machine was, you know, it getting impossible to source the parts. Their maintenance vendor was doing the best he could, but said, you know, if something major breaks, we're done. So the only thing standing in the way of them having a nice, new, beautiful machine that could transmit those images anywhere was the fact that they did not have this broadband capacity in their facility to accommodate a mammogram machine.
It's amazing how much technology has improved healthcare and how important it is to go and provide health and providers and to patients in rural areas. I always hear stories from my father and what it was like before technology and how they used to knock on their neighbor's door uninvited and all the different things they did and how simple the world was. But, you know, when it comes to healthcare, you know, broadband and connectivity and even your children now who are, you know, kind of being schooled remotely, it's so important and it's very difficult to do anything without that type of connectivity. So that's a great point. We've got to get that broadband out to all of the areas and the rural areas and make sure everyone has access to it. So I think that's going to be the big solution in the next, you know, 2 to 5 years. So Beth, what are the other funding resources out there to help hospitals and clinics?
You know, there's a variety of federal programs available. The big one that we're concerned about right now is the 340B program. This is a program that helps hospitals and clinics be able to more affordably purchase medications for their patients to use, you know, in the hospital or wherever else. And that program is being eroded at the federal level. And so we encourage people to keep a lookout for information on 340B funding and make sure that that continues. There's also a lot of other programs. There's programs, thankfully, to help expand broadband through the FCC and through USDA. There's a variety of programs to address the opioid crisis at the federal level, to help hospitals with quality care improvements. There's all sorts of programs that if people have the time and the capacity to dig for them and to apply for grants.
So I was on your website and there was a ton of information, but I also saw that you had a podcast on your website. Can you tell me more about that?
Sure. So the Rural Health Voice looks at state and federal policies and talks about how they affect what's going on in the ground in our rural communities. We've existed for about 2 years now. We have a very interesting origin story. In 2018, we had a board president who was very gung-ho about podcast, complete podcast junkie. And she came to me out of the blue one day and said, "Beth, we should have a podcast." And I went, "What?"
Yeah.
Yeah,
what's a podcast?
I had never proactively listened to a podcast. I'd listened to a few unwillingly in the car with my husband on road trips because he's has a few that he likes that I personally think are exceedingly boring. So I thought all podcasts were boring. And so she came up to me with this idea of, you know, we should have a podcast. And I went, and just spinning my mental wheels, desperately trying to get out of this, I was just saying stuff. And so things were coming out of my mouth like, "Well, you know, I don't know. There's probably some sort of expenses involved with a podcast. You know, we need," and I'm totally making stuff as I go. "We need microphones and software and some sort of, I don't know what I'm talking about." So I said, let's do this. I'll apply for a grant. And if we get it, then we'll talk about starting the podcast because we'll have the funds available to launch it," which would have worked great if I hadn't got the grant. And so, lo and behold, 2 years later,
we got
50 episodes into our own podcast. But
it's
been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. We've had a very interesting variety of guests, and I've gotten to know other podcasters and folks like yourself. And of course, Blue Sirius is more than welcome to come be a guest on our podcast sometime. We'll have to talk about that someday.
Yeah, great. We would love to do it. Just let me know when. Ask us what we would do to improve healthcare in rural America. That seems to be the question that rounds up all the podcasts. And it's so easy. I was listening to the podcast you did with Anna Muldoon in the anti-vax movement. I found that very informative, and it was interesting to hear her explanation on how social media plays a huge role in people's decision not to be vaccinated.
Yeah, the interviews that I've done on the COVID-19 conspiracy theory publication, and that is now available. You can go to our website and get a link to order that. But I interviewed Ms. Baldoon. I interviewed Ashley Reynolds Marshall. Probably going to do at least one other interview out of that book. But it's the depth that the conspiracies go to, first of all, and then second, and this is a lot of what Ms. Marshall was talking about, how much of what we think of as conspiracies and just Looney Tunes kind of stuff, there's a kernel of truth in them when you start digging deep enough. And so it's absolutely fascinating to talk about that and to talk about how, you know, these fears that people have are going to directly affect how we address COVID-19. So one of the things Ms. Baldwin was talking about was there was a survey that said 47% of Americans are going to refuse the vaccine no matter what, no matter who advises them to tell it, no matter what data comes out of the studies, no matter what, they're saying, "Nope, I'm not going to do that.
That's amazing. And I listened to that podcast. You discussed how important it is to deliver a clean, concise message and be careful to wait for all of the proven data to be reported before any press release is given to the public. So, I mean, it's good for people to just be involved and interested and make sure they get all their facts right. But, you know, podcasts are a great way and a great source of getting information out to people. I think everyone has earplugs to their iPhone and turns on a podcast and turns it off, listens to it later and when they have time. But it's a great way to get that information out to people. So how often do you do the show?
So in theory, and of course, thank you, COVID, this has been a little flexible, but in theory, we release new episodes the first and third Friday of each month.
Okay, that's pretty simple. And our Blue Cirrus radio show is on the third Thursday of every month. So for our listeners out there, stay tuned. But you can listen to Beth O'Connor, Virginia Rural Health Podcast, Conspiracy Theories, at the website.
Just go to vrha.org and click the podcast tab.
There you go. That's simple enough.
Or you can go to any podcast catcher, you know, iTunes or Overcast or any of those, and just type Rural Health Voice into the search bar. It'll pop up.
I love good podcasts, especially if they're talking about issues that we're all concerned with in healthcare and what's going on today with COVID and getting the vaccination. So, all right. Thank you, Beth. I appreciate your time today. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show. And I appreciate your help today explaining how Virginia Rural Health is succeeding during this pandemic. You can find all of their information free at the VRHA.org. Well, have a great rest of your week and let us follow up again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Beth. This is WATD 95.9 FM. We'll be right back.